Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode Beta, Mystery Men. Welcome to the Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode Beta, Part 2, where we remake our favorite movies just for you. Today we're talking about Mystery Men again, and we've already talked about the casting aspect, and we're going to talk about some plot changes, some filmmaking changes, and we're going to create some superheroes of our own. But before we do that, I want to give a quick shout out to Tipsy Pixels again and thank them for their participation in this. Tipsy Pixels is a video game event held at the Triple Rock Social Club. The next event is on November 4th, 2012 at 6 p.m. You can go play Super Smash Bros. Melee. So go. It's free of charge to get in, have some beers, play some Wii, and have a great time. I want to thank my panelists who are here again. Andy, how you doing?
I'm good. Sorry, mute button.
Oh my! Did you have some sort of crotch related incident as well? You had kind of a high pitched voice there. Is everything okay?
I'm fine.
Excellent. Very good.
That was Mark, my Charlie Day impersonation.
Mark, how you doing?
I'm great.
Excellent. Jer, are you still with us? Are you there?
Yes. Happy today.
Happy today to you as well. And Lee, welcome.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag, mein Freund.
Guten Tag, Herr Hochstein.
I am no German. All right. So far we've discussed casting in Mystery Men, and we had a great time doing that. I think we had some great picks. We convened the royalty of Remaker's Mark, that being us, convened and discussed who we would pick to recast the role. So I'm just going to run through and say who the big winners were in terms of the recast role. So in the role of Captain Amazing, originally played by Greg Kinnear, we chose Brad Pitt to play that role in the remake, and that was chosen by Andy and Lee. So great job, gentlemen. We have in the role of Casanova Frankenstein, originally played by Jeffrey Rush, we chose Alan Rickman, and that was proposed by me. So a fantastic choice amongst us. Next, in the role of the Blue Raja, originally played by Hank Azaria, we chose Neil Patrick Harris, also picked by me. So for the remake, we'll be choosing him. Next is Mr. Furious, originally played by Ben Stiller. In the remake, we chose Charlie Day, a perfect choice if ever there was one, chosen by Jer. Great job on that one, Jer.
Thank you.
Amen.
And finally, in The Shoveler, really originally played by William H. Macy, we chose for the remake Bryan Cranston, and I chose that one as well. And then finally, for the best minor character choice of all the minor characters we discussed, the honor on that one goes to Daniel Radcliffe in the role of the Spleen, originally made famous by the great Paul Rubens. So great casting choices, and I think just with that already, our remake is in great shape. So we decided that the big winner for this event, besides you, the listeners, is me. I was a big winner. I had three guys there, so that's pretty cool. According to my notes here, for the movie that we're going to discuss in our next episode, it happens to be our very first one. It's going to be Ghostbusters 8, Ghostbusters versus Rocky. wait a minute. Something ain't right there. Something gone wrong. I think it's just Ghostbusters 1. Regular, you know, Ghostbusters, normal Ghostbusters. It'll be actual Ghostbusters that we will be discussing. So I'm pretty excited about that. That is what we've got here in terms of casting. So now it's time to move on to plot and filmmaking discussions. We came up with some ideas as far as what we want to talk about. You know, Mystery Men is interesting in that it's kind of a movie about, or it's a lot about, regular people doing not so regular things or taking on great ideas. And so one of the ideas that we had talked about was, you know, what would it be like if it wasn't regular people? What if it was people that were exceptional in different ways? So Jared, do you maybe want to start that idea off?
Yes, I do. I was getting my notes collected.
if you make paper shuffling noise while doing that, we'll totally buy it. Perfect.
Okay,
very good.
Here we go.
I believe it now.
Very good.
So, yes, thank you for that lovely intro. One of the things that I like about Mystery Men as they created it, both in the Dark Horse comic and in the movie, is that by and large, with only a handful of exceptions, the superpowers that they all have really aren't super. They can do things that all of us can do. They can just do them extraordinarily well. In the Shoveler's case, he can do them very well. He can shovel very well. But the power of flatulence, the power of furiosity, the power of throwing forks is not something that you need X-Men-like mutant powers to do. Now, there are some exceptions in the movie. Invisible Boy, which is in itself a hilarious character because they played it as a character that's invisible only when nobody else is watching. And throughout the entire movie, really no one paid attention to him. His dad, the other characters, it was like he wasn't there anyway, which I thought was a great little aside to that character, a clever play on the Invisible Man. So aside from his ability to actually turn invisible and the only one-off joke of the Sphinx's ability to cut guns in half with his mind, which I think is a hilarious little...
I love that little line.
Throwaway joke that William H. Macy sticks in there at the cafeteria. Besides that, there's really not a lot that makes them beyond human. And so the conversation that we had or that I would propose is, how would this movie look if they had X-Men like or superhero, traditional superhero, Superman, Spider-Man, Aquaman type abilities? What if Mr. Furious, instead of just being really mad, turned into a Hulk-like person that grew huge and was impervious to elevator shafts and bullets? And, what if the Blue Raja could actually summon forks with his mind, like
or he turned blue.
Or he turned blue, but he could, you know, his forks were psionic and he controlled them with his mind or something. Would that change the feel of the movie, or would it, and if it did, would it make it better? Would it make it worse? Your thoughts?
I think it would certainly, everybody at once. Ready? 3, 2, Mark, go for it.
Well, I love the fact that, that for the most part, there aren't really powers in this movie. I think that, as Jer, you noted, there are a couple of exceptions. There's a little bit of mind gun cutting. There's a little bit of actual invisibility. Baby Bowler does in fact have a magical bowling ball. Although it's maybe not that obvious until her last scene with it. But, I think the lack of really, really impressive powers does make it a more character-focused film. It'd be really easy to come up with cool characters as if we were all 12 years old again, and we're like, yeah, that would be so awesome if they could shoot fireballs out their nose and everybody just disintegrates. And it'd be way too easy, and I think much less interesting.
Plus, we're going to save that for the Super Mario Brothers movie, which is pretty much what Mario does when he spits it inexplicably out of his nose.
True.
Hey, the guy's got violent sneezes.
It's true.
Go ahead, Andy.
I'm sorry. I was going to say that, and I am going to say that I agree with Mark in that it would take away a lot of the character aspect of the movie, and I think it would make it. That's part of the. It's one of the central tenets of the comedy of this movie is that. For the vast majority, they don't have superpowers, and it's not like a Batman kind of thing where he just has cool toys galore and he still kicks ass. But it's like that they don't have superpowers. They try and they get beat up. You know, they lose most of the time, and it's like being a lifelong Chicago Cubs fan or something like that. Where it's like they're just always the beloved underdogs. And I think that's a big part of it. And if suddenly they had superpowers, true superpowers, then that dynamic is changed, unless it was something where it was like they had superpowers that they couldn't control very well or didn't know how to really – didn't know they had superpowers or something, some added twist there. You know, it's like the Blue Raja could make – control forks with his mind, but only on Tuesdays and when he's in Eastern time zone or something, you know, something weird like that. So there's got to be something in there, I think, to keep them endearing as characters to us. Does that make sense?
It does.
It does.
Yeah, definitely.
One of my favorite scenes in the movie, and I think the scene that, to me sums up what the movie is about, is after the Mystery Men have their first little victory where they stop Casanova's limo and they beat it up, and then they go and they have drinks and celebrate. And they go back and they come back to their car, and all of the disco boys are there ready to beat them up, and they all have guns and they're just going to kill them. And the Mr. Furious and the Blue Raja are like, guns? What kind of gimmick is that? Guns don't go with disco. That doesn't even make sense. Like, they're just they're basically making fun of them because their personas don't match what they're doing, and they don't realize they're about to get shot. Or if they do, they don't. That hasn't registered yet. They're just so befuddled by, here's these supervillains, but they're disco people, but they have guns and chains. And what? Who are you, the disco plumber? Because he's got a big giant pipe that he's going to beat them with, and the guy's got to at least make it a gold chain, you know. And that's just off the top of my head. And that to me summarizes the whole movie right there. Here's these guys who have created these personas for themselves, not because they have any great abilities, although obviously the shovels well, as we've said, but the characters that they've created are bigger than them. And these disco boys and these other bad guys that they meet are just bad guys. And, you know, they've got these themed gangs like the disco boys and the whatever the rest of them were. I can't remember. The
frat boys and the suits and stuff.
Yep.
The suits, yeah, big tobacco. But yeah, it was just perfect that they're just laughing at them and high-fiving each other because they're putting them down because their costumes don't match their weapons.
I want to correct you on one little detail there, Jared, to stave off the overwhelming flood of angry fan emails that we'll get otherwise.
Because we obviously have
The scene you're actually talking about is when it's like the first time they sneak into Casanova Frankenstein's mansion.
Oh yes, you're right.
But what made me think of it was also that the fact that they had their first victory in quotes when they beat up Casanova Frankenstein's car, which I think is hilarious that they beat up a car, but they're so proud of themselves that they go to the bar and just get snackered because they're celebrating so much for this one little victory. And that to me is also indicative in the film. It's like, you know, they didn't by any means, it wasn't a decisive victory for anybody, and they still almost got killed because they were shooting at them as they fled. And they fled, not, you know, the other guys didn't flee. The victors, in quotes, fled. But then they decided to celebrate by going to a bar. And that, to me, was also kind of, you know, a big endearing part of this whole movie, was that they're so proud of themselves for what they did, when really it wasn't much, except put a bunch of dents in an elongated Corvette.
Well said.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's interesting is we're talking about superhero powers, but I think there's also a fantasy aspect to it. And some of that is, you know, the setting is like, you know, the metropolis of Champion City, right? So it's not a specific place. It's an ambiguous place. And the set design and everything is very, like kind of Joel Schumacher era Batman movies, like Batman Forever and God forbid Batman and Robin, but it's, you know, it's colorful, but it's dark at the same time. Like, so, I mean, there's a lot of those things that are shared with a lot of other movies, kind of that time and kind of a little bit before. But, you know, it's interesting to think about, maybe not even necessarily a superhero, but just the fact that it's displaced enough where you believe that there's this bowling ball that, you know, controls itself, that has the skull of a dead bowler in it. You know, I mean, it's like there's a degree of that you have to buy into. And because it's a different setting and because they don't go fully realistic with it, you kind of buy that. And I think if you went either direction, either less supernatural or more supernatural, I think you run the risk of losing that kind of inherent faith of that. And I think that would be to the detriment of the movie in the long run.
I agree with you, Dels. And that was one thing that I was thinking about in another kind of angle of remaking this movie, that I felt in the first half of this movie, much more than the second half, that dichotomy of this really dark Champion City metropolis, and then kind of the mixture of that with the suburbia of, you know, like the shoveler's home and like the backyard pool where they have the tryouts. There's a scene, it's a really quick scene. It's like the first time the shoveler drives into his driveway and you can see in the backyard is essentially Champion City, right? You know, like this dark, creepy, kind of a little bit rundown city right in the backyard of his cul-de-sac house. And I felt like as the movie went on, they kind of lost that a little bit, or didn't seem to put as much oomph into that. And I feel like that could have been played up a lot more. There are scenes where it just, all of a sudden, it was like, when they went off to train with the Sphinx, it's like, oh, all of a sudden we're in the Everglades, I think, or something. And it didn't make sense to me.
It was very clearly a back lot. You know, I think that's probably budgetary. Like, they blew all their vistas at the beginning half of the movie, and then it's like, all right, well, now we need to have a training area. And, like, Dr. Heller's lair, like, that's a back lot. I mean, so I think I'm guessing it was probably budgetary for the original. So it'd be, how do you maintain that? And I think from a filmmaking perspective, now you have much more digital abilities to do that. So you wouldn't have to create a matte painting. I mean, you could do something digitally pretty cheaply and pretty easily. So I think that could help accentuate that. So you could maintain that sense of scale and sense of scope of Champion City in an effective way while still maintaining it. Like Andy, you mentioned the scene around the pool when they're doing auditions, like how out of place that feels. But I also like that it's one of the few daytime scenes, and that also makes it out of place, that it's actually helpful in that way. So it's like, it's their regular life and their super life. Super life is at night. Regular life is during the day, and regular life is bright and shiny, and there's a pool and there's beer and there's people misbehaving. And then at night, they kind of switch into that mode. And it's not, it's not black or white, but it is a pretty drastic difference between those two.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And 90% of the movie's at night, which I think is funny. Mm-hmm. That the only two scenes that I can think of that were during the day were the pool scene and the first time they go to visit Dr. Heller.
Yeah, yep. I think you're right.
Some of the training stuff is not terribly well lit, but it is during the day, but it's kind of ambiguously so. But yep, I agree. All right. Well, that's a good chat, gentlemen. Thanks. The next one we had talked about was movies that were very similar to Mystery Men that have been made since then. So a couple that we came up with in talking collectively were Kick-Ass, Super, and then was it Sky High, Jer? Is that the one you were referring to?
Yes.
Okay. So so they're similar movies of people who are not superheroes doing superhero type work or doing superhero type things. And the thing that I really thought about in bringing this discussion up was, with a lot of remakes or a lot of revisited types of discussion, sometimes there's the tendency to really amp things up, and like Kick-Ass in particular. And I haven't seen Super, but I'm kind of aware of the plot of it. And I think it's very similar. It's like hyper violent. And Kick-Ass for me tried to maintain a balance of comic bookness in a lot of ways. But the violence of it really took me out of it. And don't mind, like, don't think I don't like violence. Like, I'm a big ultra violence guy, Lord knows. But it just felt, it felt like it betrayed the movie to me. And I think when we would decide to, or when we would choose to remake Mystery Men, I think there would be pressure to probably tack that on a little bit, or to really add that as part of it. And I personally think that would really lose a lot of the essence of what made Mystery Men really great, is the sweetness of it and kind of the naivety of the characters in it. And I really think that it would lose. I think you can amp things up. I think you can have bigger action in a movie made now. I think you can have bigger set pieces. You can have bigger vistas, like we talked about, using digital. But I think, I personally, if I were to remake this, if someone said, I would like to really, ramp up the violence of this, I would really push back and try to maintain that sweetness personally. What do you guys think about that?
I think that on the scale of movies that I would call Mystery Men a dark comedy, but very far onto the comedy spectrum of dark comedy, as opposed to other movies that fall much farther towards the dark end of the dark comedy. Captain Amazing dies. He gets fried by the he gets fraculated.
Psycho-fraculated.
That's not something that happens in a normal lighthearted comedy. There are those dark moments. I wouldn't want much more of that. I think that, like you said, you would lose a lot of not lightheartedness, but you'd lose a lot of the flavor of the movie. And when so much of the movie is based on the banter between characters, you're going to lose that when the characters are seeing horrible, awful things. When characters are getting, forks in their butt and just, you know, punching each other in the face or whatever, and then walking away, and they've got a thing in their nose or their cheeks bruised or whatever, they can still have a pretty high amount of witty banter back and forth that's funny, as opposed to we just went out and slaughtered 15 of their guys to break in and do whatever and stop the Franculator, and I had to cut a guy's leg off and whatever else. Like, it's suddenly talking to each other afterwards isn't as funny.
If you think about it in the movie, I think there's actually only, and I could be wrong, but I can only think of two people that actually die. Well, no, I can think of four. But only one of them is actual character with dialogue, and that's Captain Amazing. The other three...
Well, Casanova also dies.
Oh, you're right. Okay, all right. So this, my point is...
And Tony P.
Okay, oh, my gosh. Never mind.
Aside from the big massacre at the end, not many people died.
Well, my point was, it's like you have the one guy who gets zapped by the laser eye that Invisible Boy has to turn off.
Okay? Right.
And then there's a couple frat boys who get electrocuted on the stairway towards the end. Apart from those three and the others that you mentioned, but there's not a lot of death in the movie. And,
presumably in the battles, people are dying or getting knocked unconscious, but it's not something that's overly wrought.
Yeah.
We're not watching the Mystery Men mow through these different gangs to get to Casanova Frankenstein.
Yeah, and certainly there are countless little peons that could have been just stains on the floor, but they don't really get into that.
Well, but that's part of like the whole point with Dr. Heller is that he manufactures non-lethal weapons. Like they wear their heart on their sleeve to a certain degree.
That, yeah, that's a great point. You I know that, that that's the really the MO of that. Yeah.
That's his whole thing is that he, you know, and they drive a non-lethal, the most powerful non-lethal battle vehicle ever made. And it's, you know, so I think I agree with you, Jer, that putting this, this is a very funny dark comedy rather than a very dark comedy, if that makes sense. And I think keeping it there is important. That's where the vast majority of its charm lies. And I think if you take that away, then it becomes, I think it becomes less character driven and more of just, you're starting to get into Michael Bay territory and just big dumb action movie. You know, there's a million of those, where this one is very unique in its place in cinematic canon.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that as well. And I would like to take all the darkness that we could put into this remake and instead put it into yet another remake of Ghost Rider, which should be dark, but wasn't.
Interesting. Interesting.
Bazing.
Take that, Joe Hollywood.
Ghost Rider 2 was the greatest impression of Nicolas Cage I've ever seen. And it was done by Nicolas Cage.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, those are two great discussions, everybody. Thanks. So the next one, we're gonna have a little fun with this. So in remaking Mystery Men, you know, we'd have to mix it up a little bit. We've talked about who we would cast and the roles that were there before, but you gotta change it up a little bit. You gotta make things a little bit different. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna go around the horn here and we're gonna propose our own superheroes to add to the canon of Mystery Men. So it can be whatever you want it to be, but the idea is that it's kind of a normal person who has maybe a slightly abnormal skill that can help in crime fighting. So again, this isn't an X-Men. This isn't Superman. If someone says Superman, they're officially banned from the podcast, maybe. But it's somebody who is, you know, a regular everyday person that just wants to do good, wants to fight crime, and maybe has a unique way to do that. So Andy, I'm going to pass it to you. Do you mind going first?
Yes. But I will.
Oh, excellent. Good man.
My character is Speed Reader.
Love it.
I like it. Tell me a little bit about Speed Reader.
What's his power?
I hate you. Speed Reader reads very fast. He's been described in his youth as, you know, one of the advanced students, very much a nerd, really, you know, always wanted to be helping people, never really figured out how he could apply his speed reading to do that, still hasn't really figured out how to apply his speed reading to helping people, but by gum, he's going to do it.
When it's time for the research montage, man, Speed Reader is going
to be
fantastic.
See, and that's the thing. That's his moment to shine. And if we're going to talk about Mystery Man, everyone has their moment to shine.
Yes. So who would you cast as speed reader, Andy?
Oh, God. I may have to think about this one. I didn't realize that I had to come up with an actor.
Yes, sir. You better believe it.
Preferably an actor.
An actor, exactly.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, bold. I like it.
That's right.
Jerry, your thoughts?
Brilliant.
That's right.
I like it.
No, I think I would go, man, for some reason, Ralph Fiennes keeps popping into my mind, and I'm not sure why, but I kind of like it.
I like that.
So, Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes it is. Very good.
Ralph Fiennes.
Wow. All right, Jer, you're up next. Who would your proposed new superhero be?
I would go with the incorrigible scapegoat boy.
I like it.
He has the ability to take the blame for anything.
So what's a superpower?
He has the ability to take the blame for anything.
Okay.
Interesting.
He would be impervious to the blame thrower, I imagine.
Oh, man. He's like the antithesis.
Did not even think of that.
Wow. What if he was a bad guy and they used the blame thrower on him? He'd just be like, what?
Yeah.
He could have a change of heart. I mean, there's no characters of those in Mystery Men that goes from evil to good. That could be the guy.
Oh, man. Or, wow. He's like a double agent.
He would be fantastic in the Mystery Men team in order to facilitate distractions if they need to break into some place or sneak around something. They could do whatever, and then he walks around the corner. Oops, that was me. Even though obviously it wasn't, and then
because his catchphrase is just like him shrugging his shoulders and going sorry.
Yep, exactly. Just kind of a.
I think one would, if we could maybe just meld it ever so slightly, is that he's especially convincing. So, like, he can convince people that he did it when, in fact, it was someone else. So, there could be an escape scenario where someone is, like, running away and he's like, no, I'm right here. And then they focus on him and then the other people can get away.
Exactly.
So, we can maybe meld that a little bit.
His scapegoatism is just ensnaring.
Exactly. And then he gets captured a lot. So, that's the downside. That's a bummer. But I think that's effective.
He does have a very long rap sheet.
He's kind of a disposable hero.
And who would play Scapegoat Boy?
Off the top of my head, I'd say Matthew Lillard.
No, good one. Good one.
I like it. All right, so up next is yours truly here. My proposed superhero character is the Great Stereo. And this person's skill is that he has huge eyes that he's pretty good fighter. He's not bad. But if you get caught in his glare, you can't look away. And all of a sudden, you don't know what's going on. You don't quite know what's right in the world or what's wrong in the world. He's just got these eyes that you can't look away from. Once he gets in close, from afar, not terribly effective. Doesn't really have any weapons. But once you get in, once you get hand-to-hand with him, pretty decent fighter. But once he gets those eyes on you, once you see that, there's no escaping. He can convince you to do anything at that point. So the Great Stereo, and it's STAREEO.
So his big hang-up would always be having to explain. Like, you'd have to spell out his name all the time.
Yes, that's exactly.
So be like, where's your boombox?
That's the downside.
Yeah. I would love to see dates. I bet.
I would love to see this character wearing Coke bottle glasses.
Oh, totally. That's good. That's good. And it
with
will
like
be especially
flip down
good.
Sunglasses.
It'll especially good with my casting choice for that, which is Steve Buscemi.
Oh yeah,
I was thinking Stephen Root a la Office Space, but yeah, I like Steve Buscemi.
That's good. Also,
or what's his face from 2.5 Men?
John Cryer.
Yeah, via his role from Era Hot Shots.
Oh yeah,
Hot Shots.
Walleye Vision.
That's awesome.
So that's the Great.
It's too
stereo.
Bad that was John Cryer's peak right there.
Yeah.
Indeed.
All right, Lee, you're up next. Who's your addition?
Mine would be called the fortune teller. And like all other fortune tellers, he would speak very vaguely in a way that it could be interpreted that he was always right, but he never really predicts anything. But at some point in the movie, he actually does predict something because they challenge him on it. They challenge him to be a little bit more specific eventually. Finally, he does, and by sheer dumb luck, he guesses right.
It would be interesting if he could always just have like an infinite supply of fortune cookie fortunes.
Just pulls them out and reads them.
There you go. There's your told your fortune right there.
I like it. You know, if we were to tie in scenes from the previous movie, the fortune teller could tell Invisible Boy, "Yes, this will work for you. I predict that you will turn invisible, even facing certain death." You know, it takes away a little bit of Invisible Boy's belief in himself then, so that's a downside, but that's fine. He's a minor character anyways. We'll give him that. So
he could predict to everybody that Captain Amazing will be killed.
I like it.
I feel like he would be an interesting foil against the Sphinx.
Oh, yeah.
Who does something similar but very much the opposite in his spoon-fed wisdom that can at one time be very profound but at the same time very trite and meaningless.
You must learn to master your rage. Or your rage will become your master? That's what you're going to say, wasn't it?
Not necessarily.
Very good. So, Lee, who would play the fortune teller?
I think Danny Pudi from Community.
Oh, nice.
He's got a very, like, his character on that show is very robotic. And, you know, they all assume that he has Asperger's syndrome. So he's very knowledgeable and kind of Rain Man-esque. So I think he would do a good job at that.
Very nice. I like it.
Very good. All right, Mark, who is your addition to the canon of Mystery Men?
Well, my new Mystery Man is going to be called IKEA-san. And his...
Does he always have an Allen wrench?
Well, quite possibly, because his superhuman abilities in the art of feng shui can direct opponents away from battle and manipulate emotion, all with simple furniture arrangements.
I love it.
That's fantastic.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
I think the only downside with him is that he only communicates using pictures that have no words with them, using strangely face-shaped people, which so you just have to work around that.
And if he ever, if they're in a battle scene and he needs people to move things around, like to adjust the feng shui, it's like, "You move that stool over there." The what? The stool. Oh, the chair. Yeah. Okay. The chair.
Take that purple and run.
I imagine. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say his accent should be a cross between Japanese and Swedish.
He must play Shmoopo.
Now, see, I imagine a battle scene with IKEA-san being something like he's in a room and the bad guys try to charge him, but all of a sudden, like they don't want to go around the couch in a certain way, and but all of a sudden he'll be, "I'm over here."
Or does he need to like pause the battle, like have everyone like pause for a second so he can like push a couch, like has to like, physically push a couch over and rearrange the furniture before things happen? That'd be kind of
funny. I'd love it to be just a little bit super, like he actually is really, really efficient at moving the furniture.
So when I think about IKEA, I think about the fact that you can't just walk from the entryway to lighting, right? You have to walk through kitchen. You have to walk through housewares. So you do the same thing in battle. Basically, IKEA-san can create a battle environment that the opponents have to follow a very specific path. So think about the movie 300, right? They try to back him into this ravine and then push him off a cliff. It's the equivalent of that everywhere he goes by virtue of furniture placement. So they have to follow this exact path. It's not like they can go directly to our superheroes. They have to follow this path where then they can set up booby traps. They can, set up all these different things to try to conquer them along that way. So much like IKEA, you can't just get from point A to point B. You have to hit everything in between and hopefully purchase a lot of really fine, affordably priced consumer goods along the way.
Yeah. Hopefully. But except that IKEA-san would know the shortcut to the warehouse.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And if he wanted to, he could just hang out in the ball pit in the kids area, which is awesome.
And get a 50-cent hot dog. Why not?
Exactly. Oh, or a lovely frozen yogurt. So who would play IKEA-san, Mark-san?
IKEA-san would be played by Steve Carell.
Nice.
Of course he would.
That's perfect.
Naturally.
I like it. Very good. Fantastic. So to summarize, here are our additions to the Mystery Man canon. We've got the speed reader, a fast reading friend from Andy. We've got Scapegoat Boy, who can take the blame for anything from Jer. We've got the great Stereo, whose eyes will suck you in and you'll never leave, by Kyle. We've got the fortune teller, who speaks in a way that could be correct or could not be correct, or always is both, from Lee. And finally, IKEA-san, the art of feng shui IKEA style, by Mark. So really, really excellent additions, gentlemen. I think this is going to really add a lot of, shall we say, flavor to our remake. I think that's really good.
Yeah, let's call it that.
Yes,
absolutely. Let's call it,
you couldn't see my air quotes, but I was air quoting the bejesus out of that. So that's great.
Well, air quoter would be a good air quoter.
It'd be just like that Chris Farley character from
the motivational speaker.
The Weekend Update. I might not smell good or bathe every day.
Nice. Good stuff. They just keep coming. Well, very good. So the next part we're moving on here is one of our favorite additions to Remakers, Mark, and that's called Defend the Indefensible. So Defend the Indefensible is, we are given, there are two people who participate in terms of answering this. There's a reader and a writer, and there's someone who judges. So the people who are asked to participate in it are those who are given a statement that no matter how much they disagree with, how in their insides of insides they think it's completely wrong, they have to defend it. So Lee wrote this up. I believe Jer, you're going to read it, correct? And then Andy and I are going to guess this, are going to kind of do our little answer of this, and then Mark is going to judge us, correct?
Correct.
All right.
I believe that is all correct.
So Lee did the writing on this, so thanks for doing that, Lee. Jer, do you want to give it a go? You want to start us off?
I absolutely do. As soon as I get it pulled back up. I'm going to, I know the gist of Lee's question, so I don't see it. I'm going to rephrase it as best I can. Are you guys ready?
Yep. So Andy will go first. Man, and then I will go second. Mark, Andy, it's the same thing. Andy will go first. I will go second. We'll be given 45 seconds, correct, I believe, to guess this. And,
yes,
and
then 45 seconds.
At the end,
Mark. That's the longest 45 seconds of my life.
Actual Mark will judge to say who defended the indefensible the best. So, yep, go for it. We're ready.
All right. In the classic superhero team, the Super Friends, or Justice League, you had a lot of moving parts. You had a lot of heroes. You had your Superman with his super strength and flying and laser beam eyes and impervious to bullets and so on. You had your Batman with his never-ending gadgets and bat copters and bat this and bat that and his ability to crime solve. You had your Aquaman who could speak to the sea aquatic mammals and fish and control the tides to a certain extent and all of these great superheroes that made up the Justice League to fight crime wherever it may rear its ugly head. But the crux, the keystone of the Justice League, the part that you could not remove without destroying the entire league itself, are the Wonder Twins. The Wonder Twins are the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end of the Justice League, and everyone else is a subsidiary character to them. Andy, you may proceed.
I think everyone can see that the Wonder Twins and their monkey assistant Glick, I believe.
Gleek.
Really showed everyone else in the Justice League and the Super Friends how the deed was done. The versatility of forming a form of an animal and form of water really was just being in touch with nature. It was just showing that they could go anywhere and they could do anything, and they didn't need an invisible plane or be able to fly or gadgets. They just had each other.
15 seconds.
That was family right there. That's what that was. That was family and a monkey from space. And I don't know how you can talk about anything other than family values and monkeys from space with the Wonder Twins and Gleek.
Stop.
Done.
Wow. Excellent.
Step up to the plate, Bills.
Family values and monkeys from space.
I think I'm ready whenever you guys are.
Okay. Kyle, ready, set, go.
Well, a lot of people don't know this, but if it weren't for the Wonder Twins, there are two origin stories that would not exist. First is the characters in the G.I. Joe television show Tomax and Zaymot were actually based on the Wonder Twins, and without that, we wouldn't have the overused but very interesting plot device of having people with the same name just spelled differently. So that's something. But really, their biggest contribution to society is that without the Wonder Twins, the now famous fist bump of celebration would not exist. So when the Wonder Twins, when their powers united, when they brought their rings together, they bumped fists and then they fought crime.
15 right? seconds.
So without their fist bump action, all of these people around the world, basketball players, football players, people celebrating in every way, celebrating victory over crime and victory over evil around the world, they would not have the fist bump together.
Stop.
Excellent.
And the 45 seconds just keeps going on.
I could have had about 6 more minutes of that.
6 more minutes of fist bump talk. Everyone wins.
Yes, indeed.
Well,
that's going to be our next podcast.
There's actually a DVD out there called The Wonder Twins Phenomenon, The Impact of Zan and whatever the other one was on society.
Wow.
No lie. Zan and Jaina.
Ah, that's it. Yeah.
And Gleek. And by the way, Andy, Gleek was not a monkey assistant. He's not some monkey butler.
Mojo the monkey butler.
He was a monkey there.
He was the third part of their triad.
He was a monkey butler.
He was an au pair.
Does that make him the Holy Ghost? How does that work?
if that's the metaphor you're looking for, yes.
Very good. All right, Mark.
Let me determine who wins this thing.
Okay. In review of the stated arguments, Kyle, I was enthusiastic about your start to your argument introducing Tomax and Zaymot. But I think it went downhill from there, talking so much about fist bumping. Andy, I think one phrase really, really summed up the strength of your argument, and that is monkey from space. So, Andy, I declare thee the winner.
Huzzah!
Well
and
done.
You get
family
nothing.
Values and monkeys from space.
Family values and monkeys from space.
And then as Episode a reward, title. Andy will get nothing and will like it.
I like yes. it very much.
Very good. All right. Well, gentlemen, this has been a real blast. We're all ready to wrap up here. Thank you again for all the great discussion. We talked about some plot things we would change, some filmmaking things we would change. We created some superheroes. I mean, how many days can you go to work and create a superhero? So that's pretty sweet. And we celebrated the goodness that is fist bump, even though I was robbed of that. So thanks for nothing. But really, I go on. Thanks again for participating here in the Remakers Mark podcast. If you want to find out more about us and about the Math is Hard Network, you can do so at mathishard.net. You can find subscription information, how to subscribe on iTunes, and how to subscribe using RSS on your favorite podcatcher. If you want to find show notes, so if you want to find out who we chose and who we would cast in our roles, we'll put up all the IMDb links for all the information about the original movie, the original actors, as well as those that we would recast, and just information about the show in general. You can do so at mathishard.net. Additionally, if you want to follow us on Facebook and follow our goings-on there, you can do so at facebook.com/mathishardnet, and also on Twitter at mathishardnet. Next week will be our great big launch show, our first official show. We're going out of beta. We're bumping the Google trend of being in beta perpetually, and we're actually going to launch a show, so we're pretty darn excited about that.
I'm
and our movie
in beta.
Is going to be Ghostbusters. Yay, leaving beta.
Yay.
So we're really excited about that. So it'll be released in a few weeks here, and we'll be working on that after this is done as far as when we're recording, and we'll, again, check the website about what's going on. So, gentlemen, thank you again for your great picks and your discussion, and we'll talk to you again shortly. May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Wonderful.